Now, I took my uncle to the airport, came back, and sat down at the word processor. It wasn't that big a chore, I told myself. Pointless to make a trip downtown just to tell Ishmael I wouldn't be there for another day or two. But in the water of my bones and bowels, there was a tremor of apprehension. One more day, I said to myself. I'll get this in the mail tonight, and one more day won't matter. The gambler who puts his last 100 on odd and watches the ball hop into slot 18 will tell you he knew it was a losing bet the instant the chip left his hand. But, of course, if it had taken one more hop and landed in 19, he would cheerfully admit that such presentiments were often wrong. Mine was not. From the head of the hallway, I saw an industrial-sized floor scrubber parked outside Ishmael's door. Before I could get there, a middle-aged man in a gray uniform backed out and started locking up. I called to him to wait. "What are you doing?" I asked when he was in range of a normal tone of voice. It didn't really deserve an answer. He didn't give me one. "Look," I said, "I know it's none of my business, but would you mind telling me what's going on here?" He looked at me as if I were a roach he'd killed a week ago. Nonetheless, he finally worked his mouth and let a few words through. "Getting the place ready for a new tenant." "Oh," I said, "but what happened to the old tenant?" He shrugged indifferently. "Got evicted, I guess. Wasn't paying her rent." "Her rent?" I had momentarily forgotten that Ishmael was not his own caretaker. He gave me a doubtful look. "I thought you knew the lady." "No, I knew He stood there, blinking at me. "Look," I said, again floundering, "there's probably a note in there for me or something. Ain't nothing at all in there now, except a bad smell. Would you mind if I had a look for myself?" He turned back to the door and locked it. "You talk to the management about it, okay? I got things to do." Talking to the management proved to be like talking to a head on Mount Rushmore. What management knew, it wasn't telling. There were a dozen Sokolovs in the phone book, but none was named Rachel. There was a Grace, with the right sort of address for the widow of a wealthy Jewish merchant. The next morning, early, I took my car and did a little discreet trespassing to see if the grounds sported a gazebo. They did. The Beaux-Arts style isn't to everyone's taste, but I happen to like it when it doesn't confuse itself with a wedding cake. The Sokolov mansion looked cool and majestic, yet ever so slightly whimsical, like royalty on a picnic. After ringing the bell, I had lots of time to study the front door, a work of art in its own right. After a while, it was opened by a man I'd endorse for Secretary of State on looks alone. He didn't have to say, "Yeah," or "Well." He asked my business just by twitching an eyebrow. I told him I wanted to see Mrs. Sokolov. He asked me if I had an appointment, knowing full well I didn't. I decided to open up a little. "The truth is, I'm trying to get in touch with her daughter." He gave me a leisurely going over with his eyes. "You're not a friend of hers," he said at last. "No, frankly, I'm not." "If you were, you'd know she died 3 months ago." His words went through me like a dose of ice water. He twitched another eyebrow, meaning, "Anything else?" I decided to open up a little more. "Were you with Mr. Sokolov?" He frowned, letting me know that he doubted the relevance of my inquiry. "The reason I ask is, may I ask your name?" He doubted the relevance of this inquiry as well, but he decided to humor me. "My name is Partridge." "Well, Mr. Partridge, the reason I ask is, did you know Ishmael?" He narrowed his eyes at me. "To be completely honest, I'm not looking for Rachel. I'm looking for Ishmael. I understand she took charge of him when her father died."
"How do you come to understand that?" he asked, giving away nothing.
"Mr. Partridge, if you know the answer to that, you'll probably help me," I said. "And if you don't know the answer, you probably won't." It was an elegant point, and he awarded it a nod. Then he asked why I was looking for Ishmael. "He's missing from his usual place. He was evicted."
"Someone must have moved him, helped him."
"Yes," I said. "I don't suppose he walked into Hertz and rented a car."
Partridge ignored my witticism. "I honestly don't know anything, I'm afraid."
"Mrs. Sokolov?"
"If she knew anything, I'd know it first."
I believed him, but said, "Give me a place to start."
"I don't know of any place to start now that Miss Sokolov is dead."
I chewed on that for a while. "What'd she die of?"
"You didn't know her at all?"
"Not from Adam."
"Then that's really none of your business," he told me, without rancor, just stating a plain fact. I considered hiring a private investigator. Then I rehearsed in my head the conversation it would take to get started and decided to skip it. One thing was obvious. Ishmael had some friends I didn't know about. Perhaps former pupils. The only way I could reach them was the way he'd probably reach them, through an ad in the personals. Friends of Ishmael, another friend has lost contact. Please call and tell me where he is. The ad was a mistake, because it gave me an excuse to turn my brain off. I waited for it to appear, then I waited for it to run for a week, and then I waited a few more days for a call that didn't come. And in that way, 2 weeks passed, during which I didn't lift a finger. When I finally faced the fact that I wasn't going to get a response, I had to find a new heading, and it took me about 3 minutes to come up with it. I called City Hall and was soon talking to the person who would issue a permit to a traveling show if one turned up and wanted to squat on a vacant lot for a week. Was there one in town at the moment? No. Had there been any in the past month? Yes. The Darrell Hicks Carnival, with 19 rides, 24 games, and a sideshow, had been and was gone now for a couple of weeks. Anything like a menagerie, maybe an animal or two in the sideshow?
Dunno, possible.
Next stop on its route?
No idea at all.
It didn't matter. A dozen calls tracked it to a town 40 miles north, where it had stayed a week. Assuming it would keep moving north, I located its next stop and present location with a single call. And yes, it now boasted of having Gargantua, the world's most famous gorilla. A critter that I personally knew had been dead for something like 40 years. For you, or anyone with a reasonably modern vehicle, the Darrell Hicks Carnival would have been 90 minutes away. But for me, in a Plymouth that came out the same year as Dallas, it was 2 hours. When I found it, the carnival proved to be 2 acres of the usual sleaze, masquerading as merriment, full of ugly people, noise, and the stink of beer, cotton candy, and popcorn. I waded through it in search of the sideshow. I have the impression that sideshows are nearly extinct in the modern carnival world. If so, the Darrell Hicks has elected to ignore the trend. When I arrived, a barker was putting a fire-eater through his paces, but I didn't stay to watch. There was plenty to see inside, the usual collection of monsters, freaks, and geeks, a bottle-biter, a pincushion, a tattooed fat lady, all the rest, which I ignored.